Turning now to Tesla, Man Out of Time. We're continuing our excerpt, and I'll repeat what I said last week. As we read about Nikola's life after Colorado, we should consider what it would mean for the power guys of the time. We should consider what it would mean for the power guys of the time, folks like J.P. Morgan and the heads of state Nikola appealed to for support as World War I loomed, support in scaling up his particle beam weapon in order to put a fast end to the conflict through its awe-inspiring, if awful, demonstration of unassailable force. Consider what would go through the minds of those who lust for power untouchable to learn of Nikola's invention. Think of what the current versions today would do, and you know what they did. We are beginning chapter 15, Magnificent and Doomed. Quote, when he reached New York in mid-January 1900, reporters and magazine editors pounced upon him. Predictably, the Eastern Scientific Fraternity had echoed Professor Holden in denouncing Tesla's claim to have received a message of extraterrestrial origin, at least without telling them how he did it. But Tesla's offense was greater than that. The signals he had written to Julian Hawthorne of the Philadelphia North American just before leaving Colorado indicated to him that, quote, intelligent beings on a neighboring planet must be scientifically more advanced than Earthlings, a suggestion not easily swallowed by doctors of philosophy. Tesla burned to reply to these messages from outer space, certain that he was at the forefront of a broad revolutionary technology. Let me read that right. Certain that he was at the forefront of a broad revolutionary technology, he immediately began filing new patents for radio and the transmission of energy based on his Colorado experiments. As a first step, he envisioned building a world radio center offering all the services enjoyed today, interconnected radio telephone networks, synchronized time signals, stock market bulletins, pocket receivers, private communications, radio news service. He referred to it as a world system of intelligence transmission. The first patent that he filed on his return, number 685012, was a means for increasing the intensity of electrical oscillations. I'm sorry, I'm just pondering, maybe I should read it as 685,000, no, never mind, of electrical oscillations, the medium for doing so being liquefied air to cool the coil and thus reduce its electrical resistance. He also received two other patents in 1900 and 1901 related to buried power transmission lines and the method of insulating them. And the method of insulating them by freezing a surrounding dielectric medium such as water. One, a reissued patent number 11865, referred to a gaseous cooling agent, apparently a key word that had been inadvertently, and I'm always suspicious of those inadvertent omissions, that had been inadvertently omitted from his original patent, number 655,838. He was therefore one of the originators of cryogenic engineering. Many years later, in the 1970s, developmental projects were initiated in America, Russia, and Europe for methods of using superconductors to transmit underground bulk electrical power, employing various cryogenic enclosures. Brookhaven National Laboratory at Upton, New York, has been at the forefront of this international effort. Brookhaven's method resembles Tesla's, except that the object of the modern work has been to cool the conductor to a few degrees above absolute zero. The similarity moves closer, however, when considering Tesla's 1901 patent, number 685,012, in which he describes the supercooling of conductors to appreciably lower their resistance, thereby minimizing their dissipation when conducting current. This is yet another instance in which his pioneer work has gone unacknowledged, possibly because it might open a door for the U.S. Patent Office to invalidate later claims. And we will continue this reading next week. And before we turn to Pierre-Joseph Proudhon, I played, as I do each week, just before the show begins, the most current chapter of the Rainbow Children. And the one today is called Wedding Feast. Hope you got a chance to hear it. Lessons from Proudhon, our Pierre-Joseph Proudhon reading. To reprise, Proudhon is helping us to understand the errors of thought on which class is based. We should keep in mind, though, that at some point, probably in Plato's day, and then by him systematized, these errors became conscious lies, as Popper has shown us by exposing Plato's conscious intent to incorporate them in the next generation. The notion that to be motivated by what Proudhon calls instinct, and I call heart, expressed a quote-unquote later stage in human development. While a few proclaim themselves manifestations of the higher stage and set about making us, forcing the rest of us to be more amenable to rule, so the quote-unquote higher ones could craft the higher society, Plato's Republic. Proudhon is now showing us a subsidiary error that derived from the original dualism, this mind-body split, the original rigidity, a dualism in thinking that shattered our original wholeness. The idea of Plato's communism, another word for totalitarianism, Plato's communism being key to the achievement of equality of conditions for the many, the leveling effect that de Tocqueville spoke of, or the great, quote-unquote, greatest good for the greatest number that Jeremy Bentham was obsessed with, to which, and which power has seized on subsequently, to which all are forced to bend. This thinking of there being this master race, i.e., being key to the achievement, that is, having this ideology, being key to the achievement of an unassailable, the notion of the establishment of quote-unquote equality of conditions under totalitarian terms, being key to the achievement of an unassailable class system of rigid fixed divisions, and that's sort of totalitarian, excuse me, tautological, allowing, the theory goes, the best, the philosopher king statesman, to rule as, excuse me, to rule us unhindered, unhindered, quote unquote, unhindered by us. So let's recall his words, Proudhon's words, within the rubric of our reprise of them, quote from, this is from our last show, from Proudhon. Little by little, this communism, negative as long as man does not produce, tends to become positive and organic through the development of labor and industry. But it is then that the sovereignty of thought and the terrible faculty of reasoning, logically or illogically, teach man that if equality is the sine qua non of society, communism is the first species of slavery. The disadvantages of communism are so obvious that its critics have never needed to employ much eloquence to thoroughly disgust men with it. The irreparability of the injustice which it causes, the violence which it does to attractions and repulsions, the yoke of iron which it fastens upon the will, the moral torture to which it subjects the conscience, the debilitating effect which it has upon society, and, to sum it all up, the pious and stupid uniformity with which it enforces, uniformity which it enforces upon the free, active, reasoning, unsubmissive personality of man, have shocked common sense and condemned communism by an irrevocable decree. Even Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who was a Plato devotee we discussed last week, confounding communism and equality, has said somewhere that without slavery, he didn't think equality of conditions possible. Unquote from our reading last week of Proudhon. Turning now, that was to bring us up to speed, up to where we are now. Quote from Proudhon. The communities of the early church did not last the first century out. The communities of the early church did not last the first century out and soon degenerated into monasteries. In those of the Jesuits of Paraguay, the condition of the blacks is said by all travelers to be as miserable as that of slaves, and it is a fact that the good fathers were obliged to surround themselves with ditches and walls to prevent their new converts from escaping. The followers of Babouf, guided by a lofty horror of property rather than by any definite belief, were ruined by exaggeration of their principles. The Saint-Simonians, lumping communism and inequality, passed away like a masquerade. The greatest danger to which society is exposed today is that of another shipwreck on this rock. And he was writing in 1832. If this doesn't tell us that we are in a stasis holding pattern when it comes to achieving our freedom, what could? Singularly enough, systematic communism, the deliberate negation of property, is conceived under the direct influence of the proprietary prejudice, and property is the basis of all communistic theories. The members of a community, it is true, have no, and he's talking about these communist communities like the Jesuits, it is true, have no private property. But the community is proprietor, and proprietor not only of the goods, but of the persons and wills. I mean, serious, this, that's hideous, huh? In consequence of this principle of absolute property, labor, which should be only a condition imposed on man by nature, let me read that again. Imposed on man by nature, becomes in all communities a human commandment, and therefore odious. Passive obedience, irreconcilable with a reflecting will, is strictly enforced. Fidelity to regulations, which are always defective, however wise they may be thought, allows of no complaint. Life, talent, and all the human faculties are the property of the state. His word for communism, as it was in Plato, with the use of it by Plato, is interchangeable with totalitarianism. This is what we got right now. This is what we are trying to finally get past. We got the tools, thanks to Nicola. Come on. Come on, people, let's go. Let's get this done. We don't want to pass this on to the next generation. Life, talent, and all the human faculties are the property of the state. Prince schooled us on this his whole life. We got to finish that work. All the human faculties are the property of the state, which has the right to use them as it pleases for the so-called common good, my interjection so-called. Private associations are sternly prohibited in spite of the likes and dislikes of different natures, because to tolerate them would be to introduce small communities within the large one. You know, take the money, says power, or I'm gonna worry about you. They don't want no competition when it comes to their tribe. They want to be the only one that has whose decisions hold sway in the world that we all have to live in today. It is a global system. Private associations are sternly prohibited in spite of the likes and dislikes of different natures, because to tolerate them would be to introduce small communities within the large one, and consequently private property. And this is why, also we've never discussed, why the condemnation of corporations or the so-called 1% is thoroughly, that's part of power's propaganda. That's one of the buffers they hide behind, right? And they tell themselves they are superior to us because they have these lofty goals and we just, you know, want to stuff our faces or our pockets, one or the other. We are beasts, they are the elevated, is their delusion. And while they cause genocide and wreak horrors upon all of us and destroy the planet, I mean, it's just not, we cannot, until we get in the crosshairs, fully grasp how bad it is, but it is really bad. Really bad. And we're going to have to simply, instead of waiting until we're in the crosshairs, start trusting what our bodies say. We need to be free. Our bodies tell us what to do. We need to start listening. Prince was right on, exactly what we need right now. Let's just finish this paragraph.